Hello and welcome to the College of Creation. My name is Dan.
And my name is Michael.
And we are Dungeons & Dragons DMs who love to homebrew items, rules, spells, creatures, features for Dungeons & Dragons. This is a show where the two of us challenge ourselves and each other to make new things every week based on community prompts. We got a whole big list of prompts that keep coming in from our supporters on Patreon and in Discord and on TikTok, who just keep sending us great ideas that we tackle every week. We try and come up with things that are different from each other, surprise each other, delight each other, and give you new options to bring into your own games. How you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing very well. How are you today?
I am quite good. I found this week's prompt to be smooth sailing. I had an idea almost immediately, and I came up with the basic bones of it within a couple days of our last chat, and then all it was cleaning up and formatting, and I was actually pretty easygoing this time around, which I understand is not the case for you.
Man, must be nice. It was a struggle this week. There was a moment like Monday. Today is Thursday. It was like Monday, halfway through the day, I still had nothing, and there was a piece of my brain that said, you need to message Dan right now and say we might not record this week. Like, there is a very solid chance that it's not going to happen. Like, just nothing's going to come out. And it finally did, I'm very happy to say. But it was a little choppy for a second.
That's how it goes sometimes. Did you have any, like, ideas that, like, were just not getting to the point of fully formed? Or just, like, there was no concept?
The lights were on, but no one was home. I had no idea where I wanted to go. For reference, for all of you who are listening, a reminder of our prompt this week. We were tasked with making a wild magic or randomized rogue subclass that used a deck of cards or some other tool for that randomization. So the deck of cards or other tool was the cause of the randomization. And that, I think, was the part that was the hang-up for me. Mm. I knew that I wanted to, as we talked a little bit about, you know, how we could use the cards last week, and you know, talked about maybe like a gambit style thing where the cards were actually physically used as the player character, and I knew that I didn't want to do that.
Okay.
And I think maybe that was the guardrail that really pushed me out of a lot of possibilities. I knew that I wanted to use the cards as a tool to operate the subclass,
right,
and not in the game. So it took me a long time.
Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair. I think the other thing about it, we also discussed last week as we were wrapping up a little bit of, you know, what it's really unclear in the prompt what the intention is in terms of what the randomization it's supposed to generate. Is it generating additional effects? Is it generating, like your Ersatz Knight, for example, is it generating specific elements of the character, or in what order you take features? Is it something to do with a specific mechanic? Is it something to do with the build? Like, there are a lot of ways that you could apply randomization in a lot of interesting ways, which is maybe a little bit of the issue as well, is maybe you're just a little spoiled for choice.
I had the world at my feet, and I didn't know where to go with that.
Yeah. While at the same time, both of us have discussed that rogue isn't a class that either of us, you know, tend towards frequently anyway.
Yeah.
And I think it is a tricky one for subclass generation, because there are a lot of subclasses that I think are really interesting. They take a lot of the class identity from the subclass. You know, I think cleric is really strongly that way. Sorcerer is huge that way. But rogue, more of the class identity comes from the core features, and the subclass The subclass features, if you look at them, usually you get four of them, and they're usually hitting four major additional elements of your playstyle. Damage, mobility, skills are really the big three that I can think of. You know, your damage, your mobility, and you know, rogues are skill monkeys, so there should be something in that subclass that also just enhances that aspect as well. Exactly. So there's a little less clarity to, like, this is how, you know, this is the identity of this subclass, because really you're hitting a lot of boxes with the subclass features. You're not doing like what you do with the fighter, which is to take one core idea and then just expand and stack
on top of it. Yep.
That's what the subclass progression is for a lot of classes, you know, is to take one core idea and then stack on it. But rogues are built to have their fingers in a lot of pies.
I ended up using the fighter mindset for this. I have a core mechanic, and I just kept building on that the whole time.
I kind of do too.
Which I think ended up working. I suppose we'll get into this later when we do the actual pitches, but it was so strange, because I've made rogue subclasses before, and I was trying to look back on whether those were difficult when I made them or not, if I had as much trouble with those as I was having with this one, and I really don't think so. I think that a lot of times when I make things for the rogue, I already have so many holes in the class for me, personal things that could be so much better, that there's a lot of ground for me to cover already for things that I want to improve, and typically subclasses are a little bit easier because of that. Like it's much harder for me to make like a warlock subclass or a ranger subclass or a paladin subclass, because like there's already so much stuff in there that I really like that it, you know, they tend to be a little bit more specific and they require more time. But for the rogue, I tend to just kind of pop them out because there are so many things that I want rogues to be able to do that they don't do. And this was so opposite to that. There was just no traction at all until Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see whatever you came up with, because sometimes, I mean, you've said it before, pressure makes diamonds, and it was full 11th hour.
True. That is true. Pressure does make diamonds, people. Sometimes the things that we think are the worst things and came down to the absolute final wire end up being the most cherished and memorable things for our tables.
Absolutely, absolutely. Before we get into it, there was something that I came across recently on TikTok that I feel like we also should talk about as sort of an addition onto all of these ideas around home brewing and house rules and new mechanics and all of that stuff that we've been talking about, you know. We've introduced each other to a ton of new ideas around mechanics. You know, I can think of a number of ways that, you know, my warlock having those elements of, like, if you roll below your class level, you can treat it as equal to your class level, is a mechanic that doesn't really exist. You've introduced a number of mechanics that don't exist in the game as well. Your backgrounds in particular, I'm thinking of the spell scroll alternatives, huge mechanic that doesn't exist in the game and seems really super cool and useful to me. And I was thinking about this while scrolling TikTok and came across a TikTok from Bam Max Games, who's a good follow. This is not at all any shade or hate on him, but he works, you know, primarily in more of a beggar talk space. He doesn't play D&D, but plays a lot of other TTRPGs, fantasy and otherwise. And he was saying essentially that the existence of homebrew rules, homebrew mechanics, table rules, house rules, and that sort of thing implies that you and your table might not be playing the game that is best suited to your play style and to the story that you want to be telling. And I think that while there is some truth to that idea that, like, if you are truly overhauling the system to do things that it's not designed for at all, that might actually imply, but I feel like what we're doing here is very different, and I don't think that the existence of them full stop is proof of that.
Well, it's all a ratio, right? It's all a percentage. If you're changing 100% of the rules, stop playing that game, because clearly it's something within the core structure of the game that you're playing is not working for you, and there is a value in knowing what you're playing and what you enjoy and what your players enjoy. There's a value in having that type of vision. That said, I don't know that the existence of homebrew frameworks inherently means that you're playing the wrong system. It goes back to a couple months ago, there's another thing floating around on TikTok saying that if you don't roll a lot of dice, you're not playing D&D.
Oh gosh, don't get me started on that one.
That's kind of the same thing. Is if you play D&D, if you use D&D mechanics and you go through and you just explore or you just role play, and the dice only hit the dice tray 3 or 4 times in a 4-hour session, that's still D&D.
Look,
it's just it's the ratio of the mechanic, right? It's the percentage of how you're using it.
Yeah, I mean, look, some of the best sessions of D&D I've ever had maybe like 2 dice rolls over the course of 3 hours. You just, putting the characters and the players having trust at the table to just, like, roll with scenes that I didn't have to do anything about or didn't have to prompt any rolls for. Incredible. Yeah. Absolutely still playing D&D. They are absolutely still being informed by the system, by what is possible in the world. I think that Zach from Bam Max Games, like, does have a lot of good and interesting points. I think that there are things that other games are gonna do better, and if you're gravitating towards a certain playstyle, for instance, if D&D combat is like not fun for you and your table, if you don't find that engaging or fun, but you really like something that is offered in another system for roleplay support, for mechanical roleplay support, and you take that into D&D and you're really prioritizing that over all of the other D&D features, well, maybe then, yeah, absolutely. You should maybe consider just switching to this other system that supports the thing you want to do more. However, I think that there are small changes that can definitely exist and change from table to table. There's a DM who I know who runs games on Start Playing Games who also runs a Western game, and I'm running a Western game, and we have very different ideas for how we run firearms in a Western setting.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a roll to hit. You just roll straight damage.
Oh, wow.
You do not roll to hit with firearms. And I do and have worked out some interesting stuff, but I've also taken ideas from him when it comes to reloading those weapons. He's got this really interesting system involving rolling a die for how much ammunition you have, and if you roll that die, whatever size it is, if you get a 1 or a 2, you reduce that die's size for the next time you check for ammunition. So then you're not tracking ammunition anymore. Now, D&D wants you to track ammunition, but also that's not necessarily an interesting part of the game for a lot of people. But I don't think it's fair to say that, like, oh, if we're going to throw out the keeping track of loading in D&D, that we might as well not just be playing D&D.
Sure. And a lot of it comes down to your players, too. There are so many tables out there that, unfortunately, maybe to the detriment of everybody involved, feel like the game master has to impose all of the rules, where everything comes from this central location and spreads outwards to the players, and they just take whatever comes to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you and I are much more collaborative as far as, what players want to see, things that players are interested in doing, items, subclasses, monsters that they want to interact with, things like that. But that also goes for table rules. If something doesn't work for your table and everybody is comfortable with the system that you're playing, you'd be crazy not to implement a different rule if that is for the betterment of everyone that's playing right. your game. You know, sometimes it's not out of a curiosity for a different rule, or even to patch a rule that the game master thinks is flawed in some way. Sometimes it's just service to your table, you know? Sometimes it's just for the betterment of the game that you're all trying to have fun playing.
And I would encourage anybody listening who has only interacted with D&D, especially only interacted with 5e, to go read some other games. Even if you don't like everything from there, and even if you don't even want to implement anything from there into your table as homebrew rules, like, the only reason that I know how to think of different options for, say, it, just like you said, you know, the DM being the overlord, is because I've read other games where that's not the case. I've read Fate, where the players have just as much agency as the game master in terms of driving the story forward. And so I can implement those ideas, even if I'm not implementing them like super strongly mechanically, I can implement those ideas.
I agree 100%. It can all be cyclical. It can all be cross-informative. There's nothing negative about learning new things about other games.
Absolutely.
It can always be a positive.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, part of another thing that's just a personal thing, is that when I'm reading a different game, one of my benchmarks for, like, do I like this game? Do I think I could run this game? Is how easy is it to homebrew stuff in this game? How easy would it be for me to, like, cobble something together,
plug something
in a moment
in,
that mechanically works and plugs in? And I love a game like that. Fantasy Age is a great example. The stunts and specializations and stuff are really easy to make a quick first level or second level or whatever on that. It's a really customizable skill tree based system, so it's super easy to see a one-to-one and make it work.
I love that. It's an interesting discussion. I think that we could probably talk for quite a long time about it. For the sake of our creations, would you like to get into our presentations today?
Yeah, and I think you get to go first this time around.
I knew I wanted to use cards as a mechanic above the table, as a way to operate this subclass and not involved in what the actual player character is doing whatsoever. It is strictly a method for randomization. I had no idea what I was doing. I wanted to figure out a reasonable way to include randomization that wasn't just wild magic. I didn't want to fall back on that. Of all places, I was in a therapy session on Tuesday, and we were talking about imposter syndrome, and it clicked as I was talking to my therapist. Shout out to Kathy. That is exactly why something could be randomized and have it justified. If you are in a role or have a job or position that you are not equipped to handle or perform under those circumstances. So, Dan, I give you today the roguish archetype, the mystical imposter.
Okay.
My title page is a gentleman wearing a Santa suit. Clearly not Santa.
Very obviously. I think I see the hint of a black hoodie coming out from underneath and behind the outfit.
Yeah. He is an imposter. Yeah.
Sunglasses, no mustache at all, just the beard.
Just the beard. The worst of the worst mall Santas. Dan, this is not something that I have shared with you, but anyone who knows me in my personal life knows that my favorite time of year is the holidays. I love Christmas. I love everything about it. I'm not a particularly religious person. I just love the essence of that time of year. It is wonderful. Yeah.
Great. I love it.
I just love everything about it. And that
you seem like it, actually. To me, I'm not at all shocked. Like, there is jolliness just sort of around you. I get a jolly vibe.
So I kind of mixed all of those ideas together And I came up with this, the mystical imposter. For better or for worse, you have successfully infiltrated the vocation of a lesser celestial being, either by removing the being from their post and replacing them, or creating an entirely new persona from scratch. You have assumed a role of much greater importance than you may have originally intended. In your case, underestimated importance also comes with underestimated power, and it's your responsibility to utilize it. Unfortunately for you, fantastical power does not automatically beget the knowledge or experience to properly wield it. The abilities you possess require a great deal of skill to control and are, at best, a mystery to you. Good luck, I guess.
That's incredible. I just want to say your skill for immediately putting in a lore reason for this, top-notch. Incredible.
Thank you.
I want to play. I haven't even read the mechanic yet, and I want to play a character who is a rogue who's just accidentally a minor god now.
Yeah.
That's incredible. That's so good.
Like, we've all seen like the jokes where the party's on their long rest and the rogue comes back and has like some gems, and they're like, "Where'd you get these gems, rogue?" And the rogue's like, "Oh yeah, I just found them under this throne that I saw in my travels." They're like, "Those are the king's gems," and the rogue just like destroys the whole plot line of the story. This is that before the story even begins.
This is incredible rogue energy. I love it so much. It also implies that we're taking over for Santa, who in your lore is a celestial. Do I have this correct?
A minor celestial.
Minor celestial. I would have gone fae, but that's fine.
He travels around the world in a matter of hours, Dan. He has to be a celestial.
I suppose fae have fae step, though, right? You know?
That's true.
I think
true.
He's an archfae. Anyway, it's not important. But this is the Santa Claus,
Santa Claus. Really, the fake Santa Claus was just the title page. It's meant to be vague enough that you can kind of plug it in wherever you want. All right. At third level, you receive your Imposter deck. Proper use of this subclass requires a standard deck of 52 playing cards. It should include 4 different suits, each with 9 number cards, numbered 2 through 10, 3 face cards, a jack, a queen, and a king, and 1 ace, which can act as the low card or the high card, your choice, of the deck. Each feature below is directly tied to the use of this deck, henceforth referred to as your Imposter deck. Before each session, verify that your deck is not missing any cards, then shuffle it well, placing it face down on your playing table. Each card in your Imposter deck corresponds to a spell within the Imposter deck table below. Anytime you use your sneak attack feature, you can draw 1 card from the top of your deck, place it face up for the table to see. You can cast the corresponding spell at its lowest level as part of the same action by reducing your sneak attack damage by a number of d6s equal to the spell's level. The target of the spell cast does not have to be the same target of your sneak attack. Whether you choose to cast the spell or not, your drawn card is discarded at the end of your turn and placed face up in a separate pile next to your Imposter deck, your discard pile. Unless otherwise stated in the subclass, all cards in your discard pile are added back into your Imposter deck after you finish a long rest. I also included an optional Joker rule. At your GM's discretion, you can add 2 Jokers to your deck. If you draw a Joker card, you can carry out your sneak attack without removing any damage die, and then cast 1 of your available cantrips as a bonus action. Also at third level, this is a fluctuating bonus. If the card facing up at the top of your discard pile is red, or a heart or a diamond, you gain a +1 bonus to your armor class. If the card facing up at the top of your discard pile is black, a spade or a club, you gain a +1 bonus to all attack rolls. If you do not have any cards in your discard pile, you do not gain any benefits.
That's a really cool mechanic. I gotta say, that's just a way for it to automatically kind of like, you know, change over time.
Yeah. It's all unstable magic that you don't know how to operate. So all of this is happening within your body, like on your person, and you don't have any control over it. At 9th level, we have a modicum of control. Whenever you draw a card from your Imposter deck, you can choose to remove all cards of a single suit of your choice and shuffle your remaining cards before drawing. So you eliminate any possibility of one suit of your choice. This increases the chances of you getting maybe a spell that you would like. After you draw in this way, the removed card should be placed back into the deck and all cards are shuffled again. Additionally, whenever you finish a short rest, you can move one card of your choice from your discard pile back into your imposter deck. So
nice.
You have a little bit of control at 9th level. At 13th level, we have an elevated threshold. Whenever you draw from your imposter deck, you can choose to draw a second card for a chance to cast a higher level spell. The suit of this spell is chosen by the initial card drawn. The level of spell you can cast depends on the pairing of cards drawn, as seen on the enhanced casting table below. So if you want to scroll down to that second page there real quick, Dan.
Okay.
The elevated casting table, we'll go through the first table real quick.
Sure.
The imposter tech table, you have card values from the low ace all the way up to the high ace, in between two up to king. And then there is a spell assigned to each of those card values for each suit.
Very cool.
If you draw those cards, that's the spell that you have the ability to cast in place of a number of d6s of your sneak attack. Then the elevated casting table just below, the second card dictates how high of a level of spell you can cast. So it starts at a level 2. If you draw two number cards, you also have a chance to draw a number card and a face card, a number card and an ace, two face cards, one face card and one ace, or two aces. And this is all kind of within the packaging of you're constantly drawing cards. So the more you go, the more time you spend between long rests, the smaller the chances are that you will get these higher level spells. But it goes up to level 6, so there is a chance at level 13 to cast a 6th level spell, which is a lower level than a lot of half-casters.
Yeah.
But the chances of getting two aces are very slim.
It's got some great chaos, and I just... you haven't finished, obviously. There's one more feature still, but I just want to commend you for... if this idea came so late, the cohesiveness to all of these spell choices and the way that it works, I think, is really solid.
Thank you.
I can see all of the heart spells are either like healing or abjuration. So they're all protective, healing. All the spades are attack spells or like direct combat related spells. Diamond spells are like charms and delusions and all of that stuff. And clubs seem to be general like utility, a lot of variety in clubs. And they all do feel like they work together in a really interesting way.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, I really like the design choice there. I think it all makes a lot of sense. And it reminds me of something that I tried to do one time, which I think I mentioned last time. I didn't go back to that for this one, but this is really similar, but it's so much cleaner and just makes a ton more sense.
Thanks, man.
Did you mention what the spellcasting ability is for this class?
Nope. Didn't even think about it. I think it'd probably be intelligence.
I think it should be just to avoid any like multi-ability dependence.
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah, I like again, there are some holes in here. I think that on a second pass, I could patch up a lot of those things. There's also an optional rule for that the elevated spells there. If the second card that you draw is a joker, they are both discarded, and the optional joker rule is followed as written. So that can be either great if you don't want to spend any d6s and you just want to cast a cantrip. It can also be really bad if you have an ace and you're trying to get another ace and you draw a joker, you miss out on a pretty powerful spell. At 17th level, you have a spark of creativity. To a very limited extent, you have finally begun to understand your power. When you have the option to draw a card from your imposter deck, you can search the deck and select one card of your choice to use. You can't draw a card in this way again until you have completed a long rest. But that is the mystical imposter.
I think that's so fun. I love the chaos of it. Like I said, it's a much cleaner version of an idea that I had so long ago. to use a deck of cards to generate random spells and magical effects. And it's doing something decidedly different than just, a wild magic surge.
Yeah, I really wanted to avoid that. I wanted to steer clear of wild magic altogether. And I also, I thought about trying for a rollable alternative. If you don't have a deck of cards, you could also use dice for this. And I just threw that out. If anybody ever plays this, I think the core of this is using the deck to get what you want. And that would be, at least for me, that would be the fun part of this, is using a different medium for play.
Yeah, I think the deck is really key here, especially with that fluctuating bonus, you know, that discard pile and how it interacts with the play pile is I think really interesting. My initial feeling is like, I want to play with that more. Play with the discard pile. Play with the actual deck. I think it's very cool. Regardless, I like the I like the modicum of control a lot. Being able to remove all cards of a single suit.
I thought that that'd be good to remove the opportunity of getting something, but also remove the chance of wasting something.
Yeah,
if you're really like saving the chance to get a spell.
And I think having this like broad set of spells also makes it appealing outside of choosing the Arcane Trickster. If you want something that can do some spell casting type stuff, this list of options is much more broad across a number of spell schools. And I think the other thing about it is, I would say, I don't know if you thought about this at all, but separating the fluctuating bonus out to four different bonuses based on the suit.
Oh, yeah.
So you could do armor class, attack rolls, or save DC, or something else. I guess that's probably not necessary. It's a minor bonus, but maybe it's skill checks, armor class, attack rolls, and save DC.
That would add an interesting dynamic too. If you're just, I mean, I suppose I had combat in mind for a lot of these things, mm-hmm. but if you're out of combat, just in the world, and you need a bonus for something like save DCs or skill checks or anything like that. Like, how many cards are you willing to burn through and just needlessly cast spells until you give yourself a bonus that,
yeah, right?
That you could really use?
The randomization of it really does mean that, like, it's not going to have the same versatility that a rogue really wants to have, because
right.
all of your things are decided by a random, draw of the card, and not, not planned and designed in the way that rogues tend to like to be. But hey, I think for what it is, it works. And I think you came up with something quite good for it being the last minute thing.
Thank you. I would love to play this.
Oh yeah. I immediately
want to play test this.
Like, this seems like fun. This seems like a lot of chaotic, silly fun. Hey there, gang. It's Dan here, just recording a little bit of a mid-roll thing as Michael stepped out to make his wife a breakfast sandwich. Wow, what a guy. What an incredible husband. We should all aspire to be more like Michael. But I'm here to tell you about our Patreon. That's right, we have a Patreon. It's at patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod, and you can go over there and see for free all of the creations that we've made so far. We're like at like 50 something creations, either items or feats or special things, subclasses, I don't know. We've made a bunch of stuff and it's all over there, and you can access these versions that we've talked about here on the show for free. But if you sign up to be a Patreon, you will also get revisions to those things, which we are working on right now. When we hit 10 episodes, we are going to take all of the creations we make from those, make some edits, make some revisions based on what we've talked about here, put them together in a nice little volume that will be exclusive to our Patreon supporters. Also, we're doing bonus episodes over there, usually a couple bonus episodes a month where we're talking about all kinds of things. We're doing class drafts. We're having each other guess top 10 lists that are just awful from across the internet and make absolutely no sense. But we are having a good time making them. And we're doing some live homebrew workshops where Michael and I are actually getting together and live on mic making a thing together. It's all very fun. We're having a great time making new things, talking about all kinds of stuff, homebrew and otherwise, D&D and otherwise. And we'd love to have you over there. And you can get those episodes, access to our Discord, which is also where we're getting a ton of good prompts. We'll be pulling from those prompts for future episodes. So come on over. Join the Patreon. You can join for free today at patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod. Now back to the episode.
I walked past the door earlier on my way down to our kitchen, and I saw you talking. So I'll I'll eagerly await this recording coming out to see what that was all about.
Absolutely.
What do we have from Dan today?
Yeah, let me introduce you to mine. Like I said, I came up with an idea very quickly. So my sibling-in-law is big into tarot. Has gotten us a few tarot decks and, you know, done some tarot reading, and we've talked about it a fair bit. So I really enjoy the concepts of tarot as an idea to sort of look inward, think about yourself, think about things that are going on in your life. It's a self-exploration tool that I think is quite useful. I don't know if I vibe with it so much as like any kind of real divination, but you know, these things are all intertwined, right? That all is all to say that I knew almost immediately that I wanted to use tarot as the generation mechanic here. I wanted to use tarot rather than playing cards, rather than dice, if I could avoid it, to do the generation here. So if you would open it up, I have the document here, the Cartomancer. Now, cartomancy technically is using playing cards in a tarot sort of style, but it's a better name than I could come up with for anything else. So, we have one page of features and then a nice big table that you can look up to later.
We love a big table.
It's a big table. It's a big table. Hey, this is a randomized...
This is a big table.
This is a randomized subclass, Michael. Randomized subclasses need big tables.
It's a requirement. Really, if you don't have a big table, you're doing something incorrectly.
Absolutely. So, let me read you my preamble. Fortune tellers and soothsayers have long used playing cards and tarot decks to divine the fates of allies and enemies alike. It is an art often overlooked and written off by haughty wizards and judgmental members of the clergy, and therefore is frequently relegated to the more base venues of society. In gambling halls, night markets, and back alleys, one can find these card readers advertising their services. And to the layperson, it may sometimes be challenging to separate the swindlers from the genuine article. But those gifted and practiced in the craft of discerning the myriad and complex machinations of stars, seasons, and souls can do more than simply foresee things yet to come. They can learn to shape those events to their own ends. The Cartomancer utilizes the 22 major arcana cards in the classic Rider-Waite tarot deck. The Cartomancer table below is designed to accommodate a d20 roll if you prefer. If you are using a d20, note that certain features may require you to keep track of what numbers have already been rolled. Ideally, you are playing with a tarot deck. However, not everybody has a tarot deck in the way that people often have a deck of cards hanging around.
Right, yeah.
So,
that makes
if
more
you
sense.
Need to make it work... You can roll a d20, just keep note, but there are numbers attached to this table as well. So, the features go like so. At third level, you are a practiced reader of cards and have a keen sense of the ways of greater forces working in the world. You gain proficiency with playing card sets and either arcana or religion, your choice. At third level, you also get the fated strike feature. So, you have a fate... So you have a fate-touched deck of fortune-telling cards and can allow the destiny within your cards to guide your attacks. When you deal your sneak attack damage, you can draw one card from your deck and apply additional effects as determined by the Cartomancer deck table. Once you have drawn a number of cards equal to your intelligence modifier, you cannot draw any more cards until you complete a short rest. Any drawn cards, then, are shuffled back into the deck when you complete a long rest. So you can take a number of short rests throughout the day and keep drawing cards, but those cards don't ever go back into your deck until you complete a long rest.
Sure.
Some cards require your target to make a saving throw described in the effect description to resist the card's effects. If you look down, I'm going to jump to the table then with this feature, because this is sort of your core idea. We have the Major Arcana, which go in this way. The Fool, the Magician, the High Priestess, the Empress and Emperor I put together, the Hierophant, the Lovers, the Chariot, Strength, the Hermit, Wheel of Fortune, Justice and Judgment I also put together, the Hanged Man, Death, Temperance, the Devil, the Tower, the Star, the Moon, the Sun, and the World. So it's a lot of cards to pick from. Most of them have a saving throw, and all do some degree of additional thing that lasts, for the most part, I think, until the end of your next turn. So they're not super long-running effects. They don't last a minute or anything like that. You deal your sneak attack damage, and you can apply one more thing. For example, if you draw the Wheel of Fortune, the target must make a charisma saving throw. And if the target rolls a 20 on the d20 for an ability check, attack roll, or saving throw before the end of your next turn, it must re-roll it and use the second roll. So it's, you know, a sort of temporary thing that says, your fortune now has twisted away from you because of my sneak attack damage. In terms of the Lovers, the target becomes charmed by you until the end of your next turn if they fail a wisdom saving throw.
These are so good.
Yeah, I enjoyed writing them all and sort of thinking about what each of these cards sort of could mean. There are a couple that don't require a saving throw and just happen, like Justice or Temperance. If you draw the Justice or Judgment card, if the target damages a creature before the end of your next turn, that creature can use its reaction to make a single weapon attack against the target. And Temperance, the target cannot benefit from any advantage or suffer any disadvantage until the end of your next turn. It's just balance, baby. You have balanced that creature, and so it can't have advantage or disadvantage.
I haven't read through all of them yet, but I really like these.
There's a lot of them.
A, it's a good mix of ability score involvement. It's not all, you know, dexterity and intelligence. It really runs the gamut of anything and everything that can happen to a creature. They fit with the cards very well.
I had a good time coming up with all of them, and I feel like in general some of them are a little bit stronger, but that is sort of the nature of the chaos part of this. The randomized part of this is that you don't get to choose which one you get to apply, and sometimes you're gonna pick one that is not optimal, right? You're going
to
deal your sneak attack damage to a giant, and you're going to pull the strength card. Well, that sucks. They're probably not going to fail a strength save. They might, and you can still apply it, but the target is pushed back away from you 15 feet or pulled 15 feet towards you, your choice. They might not succeed that, and you might have wished that you could have gotten one that triggers a charisma save instead, but you know, that's the luck of the draw. That is how the fates decided to work.
Yep.
There is another way you can use this deck, the Fated Blessing, which you gain at 9th level. You can use your cards to divine your own good fortune. You can carry out a 10-minute ritual at the end of a short or long rest using your cards to draw one card and give yourself or an ally within 30 feet of you a bonus determined by the same table. The bonus lasts for 24 hours or until you use this feature again. So if you look at the table again, you'll see there's a second column for the Fated Blessings, and most of them are kind of a direct counterpoint to whatever effect they deal on your sneak attack. But for instance, if you draw a 2 for your bonus, you have advantage on saving throws against spells and other magical effects for that 24 hours. And similarly, if you draw that card for your Fated Strike, the target has to make a constitution saving throw, or they have disadvantage on saving throws against spells and other magical effects against the end of your next turn. So a lot of them are point counterpoint. Some of them give you special actions and special reactions.
Yeah, those are real good.
Yeah, some of those are absolutely my favorite. The chariot gives you an additional reaction to move up to your speed without provoking opportunity attacks as a reaction when a creature moves within 5 feet of you or moves more than 30 feet away from you. And you can use this reaction even if you have already used a different reaction since your last turn.
That is huge.
The Wheel of Fortune also allows you to turn a strike into a critical hit once per short rest. The Star allows you to take a special bonus action to choose a target and have all attacks against that target be made with advantage until the end of your next turn. And then the Moon lets you teleport. I didn't remember that, but...
These are great. And then, of course, a natural 20, you can choose any option
exactly
for either column.
So if you draw the World card, you can choose any of the options available to you. So there is some level of choice. You know, occasionally you will be able to just decide which one you want to use and use the strongest one or the most ideal one for the situation. But that's only if you draw the World.
Do you, you know, using a deck of cards is more finite than using dice, right? Dice are infinite. Do you just re-roll if you... end up using a d20 and you land on a card that you've already expended?
I think you re-roll, yeah. Because, again, it's designed for a deck of cards. So you're ideally going to be having that the deck here, and you're going to be discarding whatever you've drawn already, so it's not possible. But if you're using a d20, obviously you can't stop that d20 from rolling a 17 again. So if you roll a 17, just roll until you don't get one that you've gotten already. Which means that, as you go further, if you've drawn a bunch of cards out of your deck, rolling a d20 is going to be really annoying, way more annoying than just using a deck of cards. But it's possible. It just sucks. It especially sort of becomes unwieldy when you get to 13th level, where you get the Shaper of Destiny feature. Which means you can choose to draw two cards for your Fated Strike and Fated Blessing features, choosing one to apply and the other to be removed from your deck until you shuffle again. So at 13th level, you draw two cards and you get to choose which one. I considered making that a limited use thing, but honestly, I don't think it's that big a deal.
None of these are overpowered. If you're choosing to pick two cards, that's taking a tenth of your deck away that doesn't replenish until after a long rest. So if you're really going for something and you want to increase your chances of getting the thing that you want, that's at the risk of running out of cards and losing your subclass ability.
Yeah, which
early, you know?
Yeah, there is a strong possibility to not have any cards left. And there's no mechanic in the subclass that allows you to reshuffle outside of a long rest. So that is something to note. Finally, at 17th level, you get the Fated Doom feature. At 17th level, when you deal sneak attack damage against a creature that is under the effects of one of your Fated Strike effects, you can choose to not draw and extend the effect for one additional round. So, for example, if you drew the Hanged Man, and the creature failed its strength saving throw and is lifted 5 feet above the ground and its speed becomes zero until the end of your next turn, instead of it being the end of your next turn, you can just say, cool, I hit it again, and it stays floating.
I actually love that example. That might be the perfect example.
They all have that same sort of vibe, though, right? If you draw the Death until the end of your next turn, if the creature fails a con save, damage dealt to the target ignores any resistance the target has. At 17th level, being able to extend that beyond one round and say, like, no, you still don't have any resistances, you still don't have any resistances, you still don't have any resistances, that can be huge. It means that you have to keep focusing fire on that, keep dealing sneak attack damage.
Right.
But it's a very useful thing to keep consistently applied.
Yeah, this is great. Very similar in table structure and base idea to mine, and wildly different in every other way. And that is what I look for every week.
Well, I thought that a little bit when you said, oh, this triggers when you do sneak attack damage. I thought, oh, these are going to be way too similar. But looking at it again, it's like, no, these are so different. Like, you
way, way different.
I love the idea of yours costing the sneak attack dice, like the damage dice. Mm. You know, you yeah. having to sacrifice that damage to be able to do a different thing on top of it is, I think, a really great balancing mechanic for it, which is why I didn't really apply any damage effects majorly to either the Blessing or the Fated Strike features. They're yeah. all status effects. They're all, you know, things that change mechanically what's going on over the course of a round. Because, yeah, that damage could have really... really gotten out of hand, but I think yours manages to also subvert the damage getting out of hand in a really different and interesting way, which is like, yeah, if you draw like a sixth level spell, but you're like, I don't really want to give up all my sneak attack though. It's like, okay, cool, you can sacrifice that sixth level spell then and not right. cast it. If you want to just have that guaranteed damage.
Discard both of your aces. Go for it.
Yeah, like, if you want to just have that guaranteed damage, you can have it.
Getting back to the subclass that we're actually looking at here, though. this is great. I really, really like it. It feels very balanced. It feels well thought out. I like that all of the features feel like they belong at their levels. Both of us have had subclasses that we've made throughout this where it, I guess some of mine on purpose, but other times definitely not. Some of the features could be interchangeable. Mm-hmm. They can move around a little bit, and these feel very purposeful. It feels really nice and streamlined throughout. Very indicative of you having a strong idea right from the jump and yeah. kind of processing it correctly with enough time to do it. I like it a lot.
I consider that the Fated Blessing should like wants to come earlier because ninth level is pretty high to give yourself a bonus like that, but like it wouldn't want to go at the same level as the Fated Strike because that's just too much to be doing
right.
all at once.
And you can't swap them, right? You no. can't just do the Blessing and the Devotee of the Cards. That doesn't make any sense.
Strike
to,
needs to be
give
the,
a striking feature at ninth, because then you're just like some campaigns don't even make it to ninth level, and you're cutting your rogue off at the knees.
The Fated Strike needs to be the core feature, I think.
Yes,
and having yes. the Fated Blessing be sort of a tertiary feature feels
yeah.
correct.
Yeah, I think it's good.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I really good. Enjoyed this, and I really liked my formatting for this one.
This is top-notch formatting. I'm over here playing in the Little League baseball, and you're up in the major leagues of formatting at this point. Every week, you come in to surprise me.
Your formatting is honestly what inspired me to actually start formatting a little more intentionally.
Hey,
so
that's
thanks
great.
For that.
And you've already far surpassed me.
Well, you came up with your idea late this time around. I'm sure you came up with the idea at the same time I would. You probably would have done a little more of the back end work.
You don't like my my live photograph of an imposter?
It's very
Mall
funny.
Santa?
We're gonna put this on the Patreon so that people can see exactly what this looks like because it's such a funny way to think about the subclass.
It's the first thing I thought of. I was like, oh yeah, this could apply universally. Maybe I'll just put like a vague, like deity-esque looking piece of art.
I
no.
love it. I love
We're
it.
Going with a human photographed Santa Claus
yep.
with no mustache and sunglasses.
Honestly, though, it's such a good character vibe, though. This, like, I will always go in for a character who did not mean to be incredibly powerful and now truly just does not know how to handle it every yeah. time. Every time. So good. Just give me an idiot who has too much like world-ending power and I will love it every time. Juju Kai, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. The reason why I went with Santa Claus is because of the Santa, like the movie, The Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's Tim Allen accidentally kills Santa. Then he becomes Santa. He's like, I don't know what to do with all of this. I'm having lists being delivered to my house. I'm growing a beard back in 3 seconds. I'm losing my mind. And that is what I would love to have a player do with this subclass, is just play a character that is going crazy because they don't know how to handle what is happening.
I can imagine so many good ways to apply this. I mean, like, there's so many weird, like, things that players don't necessarily think of when it comes to adventuring and things like that. Like, there must be a bunch of archfey that, like, the whole thing is if you kill the king or whatever, like, you become the king. That's how things work across all kinds of lore. And, like, if you don't know that and you're just like, cool, ha, you're done. Like, why do I have, like, leaves growing out of my ears now? Yeah. I'm very confused about this. This seems... Oh, now fairies are coming to me asking for things. I don't know what to do with this.
Something feels strange. I would love to see these two rogues work together, actually. These would be two rogues that I would want in the same party.
That sounds like fun.
Is your rogue, even though it's randomized, like, there's some specialization there, right? They are a diviner of the occult, whereas mine is... complete chaos.
Yeah, where mine is much more on the lines of like, ah, yes, I have foreseen that you are going to be unable to perceive any creatures except for yourself until the end of your next turn.
Right. And my guy's like, I just ate a sandwich. Fireball.
great stuff. High quality. I'm a big fan of both of these. Yeah.
Dan, would you like to roll for our prompt for next week?
Yes, is it my turn to roll?
It is your turn to roll. I rolled this nightmare for myself. maybe I'll have better luck with whatever you roll for us today.
All right, I will roll then and see what we get. I got an 18.
An 18 today is a monster that moves creatures around the battlefield.
Hmm.
That is from Matt on Discord. A monster that moves creatures around the battlefield. That could... be so many different things.
That could be a lot of different things. Moves creatures, all creatures, or just the player characters, or just its allies. Who knows?
That's the question, right? Is it a creature? Is it like an overlord creature that just moves its allies around the battlefield? Is it an archfey that just fey steps all of its underlings all over the place? Because it could be an extreme tactician. Or it could be completely randomized.
I have to decide what's happening here from my perspective and if I want to go which direction. So that will be our prompt for next week. And I'm going to take some time to think about this. We got another monster. It's been all monsters and subclasses and feats.
We've done a few items.
If you all have prompts and things that you want to see Michael and me create here on the College of Creation podcast, we'd love to have your prompts. You can shoot those over to us at collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com, or you can head over to our Patreon. You can message us over there and see all of the cool stuff that we have created up to this point. We've been at this for a while, and they are only getting better.
And if you don't like using email and you don't believe in Patreon, you could find either of us on TikTok. I'm there at Michael_Barlos. And Dan can be found on TikTok at SirDrK.
Indeed, indeed. We could use some more prompts for spells.
Yeah.
That's just something to throw out there. We haven't made really any spells yet, and we don't have a ton on our list. We've got plenty of items, plenty of subclasses, and a good handful of monsters. Well, Michael, it's been a pleasure once again podcasting with you.
Every time.
Always delighted by your creations.
The highlight of my week.
Until next time, Michael.
Dan.
You have something to say to the people before we say goodbye?
Dan, I always have something to say to the people before we say goodbye. Today's centered around inclusion. At the time of recording, we're in the middle of June now. It's Pride Month. I did see something on TikTok. It's been going around for the past week or so, asking people how many of their NPCs are male and how many of them are female. And that, I posit, is the wrong question to ask. How many NPCs do you have that use wheelchairs? How many NPCs do you have that are non-hearing or non-seeing? How many NPCs do you have that utilize common sign language? There are many other facets to the game, or many other facets within the inclusive parts of D&D that can be explored outside just the gender binary. And even with that, how many gender fluid NPCs do you have? How many gender non-conforming NPCs do you have? Do you have any transgender NPCs? There are many things that you can think of that can and should be involved in your table. And of course, if you have players that are uncomfortable with this, gauge that at your own discretion. But I like to use the Schitt's Creek method, where you include it in the game, and you don't make a big deal about it. Therefore, it is not a big deal to your players. It's just a thing that exists in your world.
Yeah. We are playing in fantasy worlds with all kinds of crazy creatures and lineages, all kinds of stuff. There is no reason that these worlds should be less vibrant and rich with experiences and identities than our own world.
Exactly.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Appreciate
man.
You.
Of course.
And thank you to the listener. We appreciate you as well for being here, hanging out with us. And until next time, take care of yourselves. We will see you again next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hey everyone, it's Michael. Thanks for listening to this episode of the College of Creation. If you want to see our creations from this episode and our past episodes, you can find those for free on our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod. And if you decide to become a patron, you'll also automatically get access to any revised versions of the things we've created, plus our patron Discord, and bonus chats with Dan and myself. You can send any of your own homebrew prompts or questions to collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com, and our music is by Fuser Wolf. You can check out his tunes on Bandcamp and Spotify. As always, thank you so much for listening.